Welcome to Inside the Vatican with America Media. Each week, veteran Vatican reporter Gerard O'Connell and I take you behind the headlines for an intergenerational conversation about the biggest stories out of the Vatican.
The director of the Holy See's press office, Matteo Bruni, has denied rumors about the dismissal of Monsignor Georg Ganswein.
Officially, he was the prefect of the pontifical household from 2012 until February 2023. Archbishop Georg Ganswein will be leaving the Vatican. The Holy See announced that he will return to his home diocese of Freiburg in southwest Germany on July 1st.
After being removed by Pope Francis as head of the papal household, evicted from his Vatican apartment, and returned to his native diocese in Germany, in a surprise move, Pope Francis plans to rehabilitate Benedict XVI's longtime secretary, Archbishop Georg Ganswein, by appointing him as a papal ambassador. We'll analyze what this move means in their often tumultuous relationship.
Preghiamo per la pace. Basta con la guerra.
Iran and Israel have been warned by the Pope not to cause a spiral of violence, risking greater conflict in the Middle East.
And Pope Francis responded to Iran's attack on Israel this weekend in a short but dense statement, urging the nations to avoid further escalation. I'm Colleen Dully. This is Inside the Vatican. Good morning from New Orleans, Jerry.
Good afternoon from a sunny but windy Rome, Colleen.
Jerry, it's been a busy few days for you. You reported that Pope Francis plans to appoint Archbishop Georg Ganswein, who was Benedict XVI's longtime secretary, as a nuncio or papal ambassador. You broke the news in English after your wife, Elisabetta, published it in Spanish in the Argentine daily newspaper La Nación. Before we get into our discussion, I want to establish some background here. Archbishop Georg Ganswein was the private secretary to Benedict XVI, and after Benedict resigned and his health deteriorated, Ganswein became sort of a gatekeeper to Benedict. Some of our listeners might remember in 2020, around the Amazon Synod, when Cardinal Robert Seurat tried to push back on the Synod's proposal to ordain married men by co-authoring a book with Pope Benedict advocating for priestly celibacy. After it came out that Benedict had not actually co-authored the book and asked to have his name removed from it, Ganswein was removed from his post as head of the papal household. Then, 3 years later, after Benedict died, Ganswein almost immediately published a tell-all book that claimed that Francis had never trusted Ganswein and that Benedict had not supported some of Francis's reforms. And then last summer, Francis sent Ganswein back to his home diocese in Germany without a job. So with all these tensions between these two men that have played out in public over the last several years, it's a surprise that Francis would bring Ganswein back to a Vatican post. What do we know now about this position that he's being given? Is there any news since the story first broke?
No, there's no official news since the story broke. The reality is Francis met Ganswein around the first anniversary of Benedict's death.
Around New Year's.
He came back to celebrate for the 31st of December, to celebrate an anniversary mass on the death of Benedict. Afterwards, he met Francis, together with the consecrated women who had cared for Benedict throughout his papacy and also in his retirement. And there's a photo of this which shows Ganswein looking very, very happy. Now, the news here, unconfirmed by the Vatican, obviously, is that during that meeting, Archbishop Ganswein said to Francis, "Look, I'm without a job. Back in Germany, I don't have a job in my home diocese. I have not been assigned anything. I would very much like to do something." And it seems that Francis responded positively to Ganswein's plea, and we understand the Vatican then will have offered him a nunciature. The Pope will have offered it to him. And we have not yet been told publicly where that nunciature is.
Right. Corriere della Sera, which is an Italian newspaper, reported that he'll be a nuncio to the Baltic states. This has not been confirmed. But it's interesting. As far as I know, Ganswein does not have diplomatic training. So why make him a nuncio? Why not give him a different responsibility, a different role?
Well, that's a question you'd have to ask him. If he's been appointed nuncio, as my understanding is, he will have accepted this task. In fact, over the years, many people who have worked in the Vatican and who have not had diplomatic training have been assigned as nuncios. There was one who worked in the doctrine of the faith with Benedict, an American bishop, Charles Brown, was sent as nuncio to Ireland. We had Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, who was head of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, whom Benedict effectively exiled to Egypt and sent him as nuncio there, and he had no diplomatic training. There are many instances. There are a number of nuncios, actually, who have that position right now, who've not had diplomatic training.
Jerry, what qualifications does Gainsbein have to take on the role of nuncio?
Well, he has many qualifications. First of all, he speaks several languages fluently. Secondly, he's worked in the Vatican for a long time, so he knows how the Vatican operates. He started off, I think, in the Congregation for Divine Worship, but very quickly moved to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith under Joseph Ratzinger, and then was the Pope's secretary. And in that role, he met a lot of people coming to visit the Pope. And subsequently, just before he resigned, Benedict appointed him as prefect of the papal household, which entailed meeting heads of state from many countries, meeting ambassadors, meeting distinguished visitors to the Pope. So he's had a long, let's say, practice for this kind of job. And so he would be a good fit for this position.
If the Corriere della Sera is correct that Gainsbein has been appointed as nuncio to the Baltic states, that would be a really important diplomatic post. I mean, it's bordering Russia. It's at the border of a really tense situation right now. And so it seems that that would be a sign that Francis really trusts him. I know that, you know, this appointment is not confirmed, but what do you make of this decision on Francis's side, if not to appoint him to the Baltic states, at least to appoint him as a nuncio?
That Francis decided to appoint him as nuncio to wherever is a sign of confidence on the part of Francis, but also a sign of forgiveness, because certainly Gainsbein had not exactly said many nice things in recent times about Francis. As I wrote in my story, Francis is a pope of surprises, but also of mercy. And I think he looked at the man and, like his motto says, looking at him, he loved him and he had mercy on him. It's a sign, certainly, because if you send a man as nuncio to a country, you are entrusting to him the task of also selecting candidates to be bishops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important task in the church. You're also, he's representing you to the government of the country. And so it's obviously a sign of the Pope feels reconciled with Gainsbein, and he obviously has enough confidence in him to send him there. And of course, I think also Francis realized that Benedict liked Gainsbein, and he had been with Benedict for so many years. And it may also be a recognition or an act of respect for Benedict too.
I want to dig into your historic memory here. Are there any other examples you can think of where Vatican officials have lost a pope's trust but then been rehabilitated like this?
One springs to mind immediately, and it's directly linked with Benedict, was the case of Monsignor Dario Vigano, who was head of the Vatican's communications.
This was the Monsignor who left his position after his office published a photoshopped version of a letter from Benedict, and that caught a lot of criticism from around the world. And we should say, since our listeners will be familiar with the name Vigano, this is not the same Vigano who wrote the letters and who asked for the Pope to resign.
Not the same Vigano who was apostolic nuncio in the United States.
And in fact, they're not related at all.
Yes, and Francis really felt this was something that should not have happened, certainly not in the Vatican Communications Department, and he immediately removed him from office. And then he assigned him to another task, because Francis mixes justice with mercy, and he felt it would have been unjust to keep him in that position and pretend nothing had happened. At the same time, he felt that the man also has talent, and Francis liked him, and so he gave him a second job as the spokesperson for one of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, I think. There are other instances.
So, Jerry, what happens next in this story? When do we expect to have official confirmation of Gainsbein's appointment?
Any day now.
All right. We'll keep our eyes on that in the coming days. If the story does break, if it's officially confirmed before this podcast is published, we will update our show notes for this episode with a link for further reading. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Pope Francis's response to the escalation in tensions between Israel and Iran this weekend. Stay with us. On Saturday night, April 13th, Iran launched about 300 drones and missiles at Israel in retaliation for Israel's killing of a top Iranian military official at the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Now, that attack was, in fact, only the most recent in a decades-long shadow war between the two countries. It's ramped up in recent months. Iran has often fought Israel through proxies like Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, and Iran also notably supports Hamas, Israel's opponents in Gaza. Pope Francis took to the papal window at his Sunday Angelus address to respond to the previous night's violence and Israel's threats of retaliation. Jerry, what did the Pope have to say in response?
Well, first of all, he warned against the risk of escalation of this into a much bigger war, because Israel immediately said that it would retaliate. And so Iran had sent in these missiles. They'd done almost no damage because Israel was defended not only by its own Iron Dome and other military facilities that it has got, but also by the United States, Britain, and France, and Jordan. And so some of the drones and missiles were taken out before they reached Israeli airspace.
Yes, I saw in the news yesterday it was almost 99%, and there were no fatalities.
Yeah, but what worries the Pope most is that Iran said that it was responding to a strike on its consulate in Damascus, which is technically Iranian protected territory, by Israel on the 1st of April. So it said this was in retaliation, and it claims to have told many people that they were going to retaliate, and roughly it would be a low-level retaliation. Anyway, what worries the Pope is that this conflict could move into another gear if Israel responds, because Iran has said if Israel retaliates, we will retaliate in a much stronger way. And so you have the risk of the explosion of a much bigger war. And so the Pope said in his speech, each country must not threaten the other country.
I have the quote here. He says, "I make a heartfelt appeal to halt any action that might fuel a spiral of violence, with the risk of dragging the Middle East into an even greater military conflict. No one should threaten the existence of others." And then, interestingly, he goes directly from here to talking about Palestine and calling for a ceasefire and a two-state solution. Jerry, why did the Pope go out of his way to connect this escalation to Palestine?
Because that is the center of the conflict. Why is Iran and Israel at daggers drawn at this present moment? It's over the Palestinian question. Israel blames Iran for supporting Hamas, which carried out the October 7th attack on southern Israel. It blames Iran for supporting the Houthis, who are hijacking and blocking shipping. It blames Iran from supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon,
which have also been firing into Israel throughout this.
So already you have conflict on many fronts. And if this blows into a full-scale war between Israel and Iran, there is 1,300 miles difference between them. But then other countries, Iraq is in between. It can really create a major problem for the whole world.
Now, we should mention here that although Israel has threatened retaliation, we haven't actually seen any moves towards that. And we know that Israel's allies in the West have told Israel that they do not want to see this further escalate.
Yes, but the fear here is, Colleen, in the Vatican, that they have seen that Netanyahu and his government, the Israeli prime minister and his government, listen to nobody except themselves when it comes to what to do. And they have shown that they can well ignore the advice, the warnings from President Biden, as well as they can from European leaders, and they can get away with it. And so the risk of a major conflict is real. It's not hypothetical. And today we hear from several Israeli sources that they're definitely going to retaliate. They said how we will do it and when, that is to be seen. But they have said we will definitely retaliate. And so this really puts on the horizon a risk of a major, major war that could turn into a global conflict.
Yeah, I found what Francis closed his statement with. He said, "So much suffering, let us pray for peace." I mean, that's a perfect encapsulation of exactly the situation.
Yes, he's been pushing. He said, that is one conflict, but there's a conflict that's been going on for 6 months. That's still going on. Let's put a ceasefire to that. He's called for a ceasefire to what's happening in Gaza, the release of the hostages, the provision of humanitarian aid to the 2 million people inside Gaza, and for negotiations to move to a two-state solution. And this has been the Vatican's position from way, way back, from really the creation of Israel. The Pope feels that until the Palestinian question is addressed, there will be no peace in the Holy Land or in the Middle East. And so that was the essence of his message, which the Vatican went to really quite some considerable lengths to put onto the various social media.
Yeah, they made the full statement into a graphic that was posted on X and on Instagram. This is something that usually they only do for like short prayers that the Pope says. So it seems really clear from the social media rollout of this that they wanted to get more eyes on it. Both of these stories that we've discussed today, the upcoming appointment of Archbishop Gainswein and the Israeli-Iranian conflict, are still developing. So we'll keep our listeners up to date in our coverage at americamagazine.org. I'll also link to any major developments that come before this episode is released in the show notes. Jerry, thanks so much for talking with me this week. I appreciate getting your expertise and your memory on so many of these stories.
And thank you, Colleen, and happy travels as you go down to the Pope's homeland.
I will. I'll be in Argentina next week. I'll do my best to record the podcast from there, and I'll let you know what the trip is like. Two quick headlines before we go. The Vatican has officially confirmed that Pope Francis will visit Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, Timor-Leste, and Singapore in September. We also know that Archbishop Paul Gallagher, the Vatican's Secretary for Relations with States, basically the foreign minister, has visited Vietnam for 6 days, and so it's possible a stop in Vietnam will result from that visit. It could be added on to that Asia trip. And Pope Francis's Council of Cardinal Advisors met in the Vatican this week, where they were updated on the progress of the Synod by Cardinal Mario Grech, and heard the third of four presentations on women and ministry in the Church. You can read my interview with Sister Linda Poche, the nun who is organizing that series of presentations, at the link in our show notes. Inside the Vatican is a production of America Media. This episode was produced by Ricardo Da Silva. Audio engineering by Kevin Christopher Robles. Production assistance from Delaney Coyne and Robert Ballaser at the Jesuit Curia in Rome. Our executive producer is Sebastian Gomes. To keep up with the latest news out of the Vatican, you can follow me on X and Instagram at Colleen Dulley, that's C-O-L-L-E-E-N-D-U-L-L-E, and you can follow Jerry on X at Jerry O Rome, that's G-E-R-R-Y-O-R-O-M-E. Please consider becoming a digital subscriber to America Media. Just click on the link in our show notes. It's easy to do, and it's the best way to support our work here on Inside the Vatican. And if you have a little time to spare, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. For America Media with Gerard O'Connell, I'm your host and producer, Colleen Dulley. We'll see you next time.